Shajan.
Hey, Liza, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Late day for you.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Oh man, that sounds very depressing. I feel like you're tired.
So, but it's supposed to be a public holiday for us here.
Yeah.
I guess it is for the US as well, right? But yeah, we still have a lot of work to do.
No, for sure. Well, first of all, I just want to say congratulations. You're getting married.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, but it's been going to be postponed because of the COVID situation.
Yeah.
So right now we're still looking for dates. Yeah.
So, and it's going to be, I'm assuming, before it was going to be this year?
Yeah, I think I previously told you in October, but I think that's going to have to postpone till next year because I don't think, you know, a lot of people want to fly to somewhere and, mm-hmm. you know, during this period. Yeah, so it's going to be quite challenging. So I think we're going to postpone it to sometime next year, but we haven't really finalized on a date yet.
Yeah. Man, 2021 is going to be the year of all weddings, I feel like.
Yeah.
But look, like I said, I'll definitely be there. So I'm really excited. So congrats on that. But look, welcome to the podcast. I'm, I've known you for, I don't know, 7-8 years now, I feel like. And those of you who have not met Eliza has been a friend, a mentee, someone who, you know, has been kind of, the spirit of Leaders, which was the old organization in all of Singapore. And everybody knows Eliza, and I've never heard anything negative about Eliza. So, from other than that, I think, like, you know, you have obviously an amazing background from going to NUS and then, you know, rising up very early age in banking, you know, working at all the cool places like Standard Chartered and JP Morgan. And now, you know, you're working at Temasek's investment arm called C-Town. So with that, I just want to say welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy to have known you for so many years and I'm really excited for your journey. So welcome.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Shajan. And thanks a lot for the high praises.
No. I think you definitely deserve it. And you've been like such a key part of my life and my journey. In the last, whatever, 6, 7, 8 years. So look, I want to, you know, the students that we have on my podcast are predominantly like young people who are still in college or young professionals who are trying to break into, you know, maybe something that it's their dream job. And instead of like bringing in Elon Musk or, you know, someone too far away or too out of like hand or out of reach, I guess, I want to bring folks who have impressive early parts of their careers and how they kind of navigate it. So I want to kind of go back to the early days of your story, right? So when you were growing up, are you from Singapore originally? Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, I grew up in Singapore. So I studied in Singapore as well, even for my university degree. Mm-hmm. I guess for some other students, they have the option to go overseas.
Yeah.
As well, yeah.
So you went to NUS. So in Singapore, obviously Singapore is a small place in terms of population. A lot of students go through either NUS, which is National University of Singapore, or SMU, or what's the third one? NTU?
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are the three, you know, bigger schools, but SMU and NUS are the two major business related schools, I guess. Obviously NUS is a lot of other things. So you chose NUS. What was the reason for that versus, let's just say, SMU?
I think back then it was more academic reasons. Mm-hmm. Because back then, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to study, but I knew I wanted to be in finance.
Yeah.
So I was just torn between, you know, should I choose like a business major or should I go to a more technical background like economics? So at that time, NUS was the only school that offered both a double degree in business and economics across the two schools.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why I chose NUS. But I think right now, I think SMU and NTU do offer both a double degree program in both those two areas as well. But back then in my time, it was just NUS. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason why I chose that.
And how much does degree matter? Like, you know, in the US, if you go to a top tier school, right? Like, it wouldn't matter. Like, for example, if you're at Harvard and you're studying history, it's fine. You'll still be accepted at Goldman Sachs. But like in Singapore,
Yeah, I think in Asia, I think that's a very good question. I think in Asia, I think in Asia is quite different. But I think for the global banks, they are more accepting of people from different academic backgrounds, especially with the American banks. Mm-hmm. But in Asian context, I think most of them actually prefer someone with prior experience and mm-hmm. already knows the technicals behind what is required of the job.
And
during internship, you learn how to actually apply those principles. So it's kind of a bit different from, I guess, a US internship whereby, you can be from a history major or, a chemistry major, but as long as you're able to pick it up fast, it's fine.
Yeah.
But I guess for Asia context, they kind of like expect you to know to like jumpstart right into it on day one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's quite different. But again, to your former question as to whether, a degree matters, I guess to some extent, when I mentioned earlier on a double degree, I guess a lot of employers don't really care about that. They don't really know a difference between a double major versus mm-hmm. a double degree. So I think what was more important for me back then, was to think about how I could separate myself from my peers, how to position myself better for an internship. And the way to do that was I realized was not just academic. It's more about your internship experience. If you have any case study participations in school mm-hmm. or involved in any investment club or societies or have projects that you're able to showcase, I think that will actually separate you from just having a degree in school.
Yeah. I think that's a great point, and I think it's a good segue into. Very early on, in your, I guess, career path, especially when you were in college, you started getting into internships and you started getting into like finance and business related internships. So the first one that I remember you did was the Bloomberg internship or the boot camp.
Yeah. So actually, before that,
yeah.
it was, a hedge fund internship, which was very, very small.
Yeah.
But back then, I guess, to your question as to how did I get the initial internship, I think that is the first how to get your foot in.
Yeah.
First, back then I just finished my second year, which mm-hmm. was kind of late to have an internship in Asia.
Yeah.
Because I was just having too much fun, and I came back after my internship. I kind of panicked because I had nothing for summer.
Yeah.
Whereas all my friends had. And then I went out to my career office. I showed her my resume, and she basically said, "Why does your resume not have anything at all?"
Yeah.
And so I kind of panicked from there.
Yeah.
And then I spoke to her and said, "I really want an internship. I don't really care what's going to be. For summer, I just want one to be on my CV, and then we can move off from there."
Yeah.
And then I managed to get one, which was in a hedge fund. Mm-hmm. And then the Bloomberg one came along was because it was more of a from the career office that, it was just an announcement blast and then you have to sign up for it.
Yeah.
It was like a 2-day workshop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they still do it now. But then I thought it was a good insight as to, back then in school,
you
really have the opportunity to use the Bloomberg. So I thought it was a good, learning experience to use it.
And then, I guess one question I have on that is when you're that early, you're in your second year or maybe, in second year of your college, you don't really know much about, business or finance and what jobs exist out there. How did you have how did you find the passion for, say, investment banking or some of this high finance?
I think for me, I was kind of like a late bloomer where I was already starting my third year. I had no internship experience.
Yeah.
So I kind of like panicked and, I tried to reach out to everything that, every resource that I can grab my hands to. So be it like, the corporates coming down to give like workshops about what banking is, attend such talks.
Yeah.
But I think the more helpful one is to actually speak to a senior mm-hmm. who have already experienced it and can give you their own personal experience. I think that was an easier way for me to understand more about the different internships and how banking was like.
Yeah. That makes sense. So you take that and one of your bigger brand internships came with Deutsche Bank, right? So this was like a spring into banking. What was that thing?
Back then it was like, I think it was a over a weekend thing whereby, you know, you shadow people from the team to get a sense of, you know, what their daily work entails. And it's just like, you know, just a glimpse of to what the different departments in banking do. So back then I was with the sales and trading desk. So I shadowed two people around. One was in the credit sales desk, and then the other one was the commodities trading desk. I thought it was a good glimpse as to, you know, what a daily task, you know, what's expected of you. But it was more of just shadowing.
Yeah. So I guess, like, you know, when you're young, I think one of the key things I tell students is that always, always explore and try as many things as possible, because you never know who you're going to run into, who you're going to meet, your network expands. And unless you do that, you're not, you know, you're not going to get that edge, you know, before real recruiting starts, and whenever that real recruiting is. And for you, I guess the first real, you know, internship in investment banking came at HSBC.
Yep.
So this was your summer of third year?
Yeah, summer of my third year.
Got it. And, talk to me about that. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it was my first investment banking internship. So I didn't really know what to expect. I mean, I heard, you know, what my seniors talked about, but I really didn't, you know what it was like until I was on the job. So it was kind of like a eye-opening experience for me. I had the opportunity to do like deals across you know, like credit or equity, you know, bond issuance and stuff like that, different products. You know, and I had a really good boss when I was covering oil and gas, who taught me, you know, basically how the sector works. So I think it's, back then it was just more of you know, them saying, you know, hey, do this. It's more, you know, like them giving you instructions and then you just carrying it out. So I think it's very different, you know, because that was, you know, my first internship. So it's more of a lot of like hand holding. And then as you progress on to your subsequent internships, I guess the intention was to impress so that you can convert it into an offer. So I thought that HSBC actually gave me a good foundation. For my subsequent internships.
Yeah. In your next few internships, and this is where I think, like, your path has been interesting, because you were doing internships at a much faster pace and during school year, it feels like. Like, you did the HSBC internship during the summer of 2013, but then, you know, you come back to school and you do like a winter internship at Standard Chartered, and then you do another summer at JP Morgan the next summer. So how are you balancing school and work at the same time?
So I guess for NUS, they actually allow you to take a leave of absence if, let's say, you know, you're taking a 6-month internship. But because for my winter internship, it was about 8 to 10 weeks, and because school break was about 4 to 6 weeks, you know, I had to tell, you know, my professor that, you know, hey, I'm going to be missing lessons, is that okay? And then she said, it'll be fine, but you'll be missing out on attendance points. So it's kind of like, you know, you have to juggle between, you know, what you think is more important, you know, doing the internship or getting good grades, and there's a fine line for that. But I think for the Stan Chart one, I thought it was a great opportunity. You know, they weren't hiring for winter back then. Typically for Stan Chart, they only hire for summer. So how I got the opportunity was kind of like, you know, like luck. Basically, the team came down for one of those corporate events that they have at my school, just to give a talk about, you know, how banking is and whatnot. And then, you know, I asked them, like, one of the teams that, hey, do you know any of your sector teams that need help over the winter period? I know that you guys are not hiring for a formal internship. I'm happy to help because I have like six weeks, right, of holiday. And then the guy said, okay, hey, you know, you've done this before and you have experience, or you might be helpful to, you know, the infrastructure team who needs someone. So he said, why don't you drop me an email with your CV and we can go on from there. And so that's exactly what I did, and that's how I got the winter internship for Standard Chartered, which is actually not a normal thing for them to do. Yeah, so I thought that was quite of like luck, and also because, you know, I was like kind of like hustling them to give me one.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Oh. I remember because I was so it worked out in San Francisco back then, and I remember we used to chat after I used to finish work, and you were trying to hustle into, you know, squeezing as much as you could out of like these banks to give you an internship.
Yeah.
Amazing. But that's amazing. And then, you know, you broke into an American bank in the summer of 2014. But now at the same time, this was your final year at NUS. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was my final summer at NUS. So I graduated off cycle. Yeah.
Oh, you graduated off cycle. Okay, got it. So you did an internship at JP Morgan. How was JP Morgan's experience compared to some of the Asian banks, you know, in Singapore?
I think it's quite different from the other banks that have interned. I think firstly they're more global, mm-hmm. In the sense that you don't do plain vanilla like IPO issuances or, you know, M&A. You do like structured M&A deals, like cross border M&A, which is more, I guess, eye opening. And I thought that, you know, I think JP Morgan back then when I was with the team, it was one of the best teams that I've been at. I mean, everyone feels like family. They're very willing to teach you as long as you have the right attitude. So I think for an intern, I think the right attitude matters the most.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you took that experience, and I guess, like, you know, you're going to graduate off cycle. Did you converted the JPM internship into a full-time offer before our school started?
Yeah, they actually gave it, I think for the American banks in Asia, they actually gave it to you, you know, in your last week of your internship. They will sit everyone down individually.
Yeah.
And then they will let you know whether you have to, you will get the offer or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I guess in that sense, you don't really have to, you know, wait in anticipation that, hey, am I getting the offer or not?
Yeah.
If you don't get the offer, you can immediately start another job search immediately. So you don't have to wait until you graduate.
Yeah. And what do you think was the, you know, if you could like look back at that time, what were some of the things that you think helped you secure that offer over the 2-3 months that you were, you know, interning with them?
I guess firstly, being very communicative. Mm-hmm. As an intern, which is kind of hard because you don't know, you know, when a certain task is expected to be due, and you have multiple tasks. And as an intern, you do not know which to prioritize. So I guess, you know, having a good relationship with, you know, your associate or the analyst you're working with, will kind of like, you know, help you think about which task to prioritize first, so that you can finish the more urgent ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's number one. I think number two, and more importantly, is to have the right attitude, to always show that you can do. And if you do not know how, just always ask, because it's better to ask and save yourself and your analyst a lot of time rather than, you know, wait for your analyst to say, hey, this is not the right way to do it. Why didn't you ask me earlier?
Yeah.
So I think to be very proactive as well. And then the third point, I think, is more teamwork and good team dynamics. I think ultimately they want to find someone with a good fit, because, you know, you're seeing the person for more than, you know, 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
Kind of feel like family, you know, we hang out even on weekends outside the work context. So I think being a good fit is also very important.
Yeah. Now, yeah, I think those are really good points. And especially, like, I think the other thing I'd add to that is just networking during the entire time. Like, even if you are at a, you know, a top investment banking internship or consulting internship, you should still be networking. And I remember you were always trying to meet and connect with as many people in the industry, even then, because you never know you're going to get it or not, right? You never know if you're going to get the job or not. So just having that is important as well. So Eliza, you took that, you come back to final year of your school, or final semester, I guess, because you graduated off cycle, and you graduate, but then you have some time off before, you know, the full-time experience begins. So what does Eliza do in her life when she's not chasing the best of the
team? Yeah, so I had like a 5-month break because I graduated in December, and I think the season really started only in May or June.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my team was okay with me, you know, taking a break up to May back then. So I took the time off. I did a bit of like, you know, like a grad trip. And then after that, when I came back, you know, I decided to do, you know, to try out bartending, which was something that I always wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I went, I did bartending for like 3 to 4 months before I started, which was quite fun.
Yeah.
That's
amazing. And this was bartending in Singapore or where else?
Yeah, this was bartending at Singapore at Raffles Hotel.
Oh, wow.
Which was, you know, known for the Singapore sling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you know how to make perfect Singapore slings now. Yeah. So when you do come to visit or when I come to visit you, I can make one for you as well.
No, I love it. This is amazing. See, this is where, like, people, you know, forget that, you know, people, you know, it's good to actually go explore your passions and not be afraid of that. I think that's awesome. So, Eliza, you joined investment banking at JP Morgan. It's one of the top internships or top roles as a full-time as an analyst. And you were there for 2 years, just over 2 years. Talk to me a little bit about that experience and you know, and then we'll kind of transition into, you know, nearing the end of 2 years. You're always, you know, a lot of analysts think about jumping into private equity, venture capital, maybe even industry. How did you think about, you know, going, you know, doubling down on the investment side?
So that I was in banking for only a short 2 years, but it felt like, you know, it was really fast. Everything happened in a blur. Mm-hmm. I think the first year was just really learning the ropes. And, you know, back then when my peers at Citi or like Deutsche Bank were looking for, you know, other alternatives, be it private equity or on the investment side, I think the JPM team was quite bonded. And mm-hmm. I think we had a very long history of no one leaving the team.
Yeah.
So I think... prior to that, I think only one or two associates left to join the buy side. But other than that, most of them were like lifers because, mm-hmm. you know, everybody was so close. And then really in my second year, one and a half years in, that I decided to look out for other options because, you know, I always wanted to do like investing more on the public equity side. I know that it's not common for someone from investment banking to go to the public side.
Yeah.
Because I think the more common track is more on a private equity. But it was just something that I wanted to try out. So I began to explore the option 1.5 years in. And I think it took me about 6 months, 4 to 6 months to actually get an offer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And it's like 6 months to get an offer into CTAM, is that right?
I think it was more of like a process. I didn't start CTAM until very late in the year. Mm-hmm. It's more of, you know, interviewing with different funds and figuring out whether it was the right fit, figuring out what kind of, qualities they want to have as well. Yeah. And it's kind of difficult because on the public side, they want a very different skill set versus investment banking.
Mm-hmm. And what is that? What is the different, I guess, skill set and both qualitative and quantitatively?
I think quantitative is about the same. You need to have good, solid, fundamental technicals. Mm-hmm. But more on the qualitative side, they want someone who is more in tune to markets because it's not only just fundamentals that move markets. There are other factors such as macro technicals as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted someone that is more in tune with markets and how the stock behaves rather than, you know, just the fundamental aspects of it, which I thought that, you know, it was something new for me. It was something new that I had to pick up when I was on the job. Yeah.
Got it. That makes sense. So Eliza, you've been at CTown, which is Temasek's, one of Temasek's investment arms. So for those of you who don't know Temasek as well, Temasek is one of the largest, I don't even know how to describe it. It's basically one of the largest Singaporean entity. It's state-owned, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, state-owned. It's something like GIC. So GIC is kind of like our sovereign wealth fund. And then Temasek invests in government-linked corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Temasek has a massive global network. They're big in, you know, they're basically in a lot of things. And you know, getting a role in a Temasek is not only you learn a lot, you see a lot too. So you've been a general investment analyst there, or generalist investment analyst, and you're covering a bunch of different sectors from internet to consumer. You've been there now almost 3 years coming up. What are you thinking about now? What's next in your life?
Yeah, I think the journey with SeaTown has been amazing. We do multi-asset, so across both the private side, public side, and across you know, different asset classes, so equity and credit. So it was really, you know, I learned more than just public equity, which was what I thought I would be doing going in. But actually, I learned more than that, like the different asset classes as well. So I really enjoyed you know, my time here in SeaTown, especially. You know, you get to work very closely with your portfolio manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the people here in SeaTown are willing to nurture, and also, you know, we are very close to our portfolio managers. We can speak to them anytime we want to.
Yeah.
I think that helps a lot in, you know, my learning and development.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, yeah, so I joined as a generalist for 1.5 years. And then for the remaining 1.5 years, you know, I assumed the healthcare role.
Yeah.
And it's for a global healthcare. So I guess the learning curve was super steep for me because, you know, I don't have a PhD background. So I didn't know anything about, you know, the drugs, how do I read clinical trials, you know, when I was assuming the role. Mm-hmm. But I kind of like picked it up along the way.
Yeah.
So that's where I am right now, you know, covering global healthcare. My thoughts for the future. Not sure about the career from the career perspective right now, but I'm focused on getting married first.
Yeah. Career seems like it's doing well, so you're not too worried about it. You're more worried about, you know, getting the wedding done.
Yeah, and that's really like, you know, a logistical nightmare.
For sure. And that's awesome. So look, Les, I think you've obviously had an amazing career journey so far, and I feel like this is kind of, you know, nearing the end of your phase one, which is, you know, you've tried a bunch of different things and you've kind of honed in on something that you really love. And I think this is where you enter phase two, which is doubling down and really becoming an expert. And I think that's going to be, you know, coming up in the right after the wedding. So congrats on that. I guess, you know, one question I love asking folks who come on the podcast is, if, you know, looking at your resume, you have all these amazing brands from NUS, a great school. Then you worked at HSBC, then Standard Chartered, JP Morgan, and now one of the top investment groups in the world. Let's say I deleted all of that. So none of that exists. The only thing that exists on your resume is your name, Eliza. So who is Eliza?
I guess I would say, you know, I'm quite a fun-loving person, but at the same time, you know, I take my work, my job, seriously, in a sense that, you know, I'm always very motivated and I love what I'm doing. I'm very passionate about what I do. So I'm very excited to go to work every day. And I think that, you know, when I'm at work, I try to give my 100% all the time. And beyond that, I think I'm also very hungry in a sense that, you know, I guess, you know, being in the different jobs, I think, you know, what sets a good employee versus, you know, a mediocre one is always being, you know, having the right attitude and being hungry to learn more.
Yeah.
And that's what sets yourself ahead of the curve. And I try to, you know, to learn as much as I can, wherever, you know, in whichever organization that I'm at in, and also try to contribute, you know, my 100% all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess, you know, from a work perspective.
I love it. That's amazing, Liza. Well, look, you know, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it, especially given the fact that it's so late in Singapore and you're finishing a bunch of work calls and then jumping on this. But look, I really appreciate it. I think your story is going to definitely motivate a lot of folks, and especially the, you know, the whole passion at an early age and, you know, being, you know, persistent about it and how to break in and doing everything that was in your control to not only getting the opportunities that you were excited about, but also creating them at some point and, like, you know, forcing banks to create internships for you. So I think that shows, you know, how competitive these industries are, and you got to, you know, do everything that's in your control to, you know, get closer to your dream. So, hey, with that, I just want to say thanks for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Shajan. And you know, do feel free to reach out to me if there are any questions. To anyone who is listening out there, happy to share my experience as well. As I always believe, you know, in giving back to those who have helped me. You know, Shajan has been a very good mentor to me during my formative years, and I always want to give back to those, you know, who are students and who are trying to learn more about banking or trying to break into investment banking. So I'm always happy to help here. You can just reach out to me. Shajan, you know where to find me. Yeah.
Love it. Well, thanks so much, Eliza. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Shajan. Thanks for having me on.